From Peoria Public Radio, this is Out and About. I'm Nathan Irwin.
And I'm Suzette Boulay with Arts Partners of Central Illinois. This week we're talking with Jim Bobrowski, president of the board at Peoria Players Theater, talking on behalf of Barefoot in the Park that continues through October 13th. Jim, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Now, for those who don't know Barefoot in the Park, this is an early Neil Simon play, and Neil Simon obviously went on to write The Odd Couple and many other plays and really become this enormous figure in American theater. Are there signs in this early script of that playwright that Neil Simon would become? Can you see hints or seeds of it?
You know, that's a hard question to answer because this one, it really isn't like any of his other shows, I don't think, because it just deals with this young couple and the difficulties they have, her being a free spirit, him being a very conservative young lawyer who just got his license, and it's a different time, and I don't know, it's just different than the others, I think. I don't really see a lot of it in his later pieces.
And talk a little bit about the fact that it does seem a little dated. However, there have to be some universal premises about relationships.
Oh, right. The wife in this story, Corey, her whole mission is to get this apartment, in this old brownstone at the very top of the floors there, the fifth floor up, and to decorate it and make it a home for them. And his mission is to make the money, pay for the apartment, and have a place that he can feel comfortable in. Obviously, the comfort zones between the two are quite different. She's willing to settle for chic shabby. He's not. When they don't have a bathtub, it's a major issue with him.
So is he a little bit of a control freak?
A bit.
Yeah, I remember seeing a production many years ago, and it's worth noting that this is a play that's set 50 years in the past, and obviously a lot of things about relationships and marriages and the roles of genders have changed in the intervening 50 years. But at the same time, on a certain level, you know, two young kids starting out their lives together, that's kind of universal. That, you know, being a newlywed is kind of the same whether you do it today or in the 1960s.
That's true. That's true. But he muddles the issue here with this by involving the mother-in-law, her mother, who is a widow. She decides that she's going to help her and her social life by trying to get her involved with the man upstairs, Victor Belasco, who is kind of a very strange Greek man who just kind of wanders in and wanders out. He has to get into his apartment by climbing across the ledge through their bedroom window because he's been locked out of his apartment. And he's just kind of a very free spirit. And her mother, again, is something like her husband, a conservative woman. So she's trying to draw her into it. So I guess maybe some young ladies might be trying to help their mothers find a new spouse, but I think back then it was kind of a new sort of thing. It was a little more daring when she did it.
You know, it's interesting. You have the central couple, you have the mother-in-law and the eccentric neighbor, and then there are two characters added to the script. There's a delivery man who you play, and there's also a phone technician.
Right.
And I've always been curious what the function of these two characters is, because the plot dynamics revolve around the four, and then you have these two characters who show up in the apartment. And but what are they? Are they moving the plot forward? Are they sort of commenting on the situation?
I don't know. I think it's just there to maybe fill some space. I'm really not sure what their purpose is because. You know, the phone man is hooking up phone lines. They're establishing some things, too. I mean, he's the one that brings up the fact that you're a newlywed and talks about the apartment and kind of questions that you're going to live here all day, you know. So he's kind of setting the scene for what the apartment is really like, I guess, to the average person, not just to her who thinks it's marvelous. And the poor delivery man, he's there because later on the mother says, oh, did you get the clock that I had sent out to you? So basically he just covers that line. That's about what he does. and just comes in and goes out.
And I wonder if there are any lessons that the key characters, the new husband and wife, are supposed to learn throughout the course of the play, and then consequently what we as the audience are supposed to learn about relationships.
I think it's just, you know, the age-old thing. You've got to agree to disagree at times, and you've got to be able to put up with the other person's attitude or their feelings about a given situation and the fact that it might be different than yours.
This is, if I'm not mistaken, this is the only comedy in the Players' season this year. So what does the show accomplish in the context of the bigger season? Is it important to have a comedy in between the two musicals the way you have it? Or?
Well, we've been toying with this philosophy for years. Individuals on the place, the selection committee in the past, have said, we can't just do musicals. We've got to do other things so that we give the audience a broader choice of theater. And then we have the other voice that says, but people want musicals. And if you want to sell tickets, you've got to do more musicals. So we're still trying to balance that situation. Also, actors like to do things other than musicals. Some of them like to, you know, just live for the comedy that we do. And there are those folks who just, you know, can't end their year without at least one drama. So you're trying to play to the levels of your membership and to the audience, what they want to hear. It's just kind of a balance, a dance we do every year when we select plays.
There's also kind of a logistical cleverness to it, because the fall is bookended by two very large musicals, and it's probably also easier on some level to put a smaller ensemble kind of comedy in between two shows that are much bigger and much more complicated.
Oh, sure. That doesn't hurt at all. And you're right. The opening show, we want it to be a blockbuster. That's why we put Les Mis there. And it was a major blockbuster. And then the tail end, Shrek, well, we're trying to build up our season ticket for the next year. And when you put a good show like that on, people leaving the theater remember you. And when they get those pieces of paper suggesting that they join, they fill them out. And after last year's season, we probably gained about 80, 85 new season ticket holders this year. So the last show has a major effect. And again, we're still taking tickets during the first show, so it does too.
In fact, can you share your schedule? What is the itinerary for the rest
of
the season?
After Barefoot in the Park, we'll be doing Meet Me in St. Louis, which will be in November. It starts on the 8th, which is a wonderful music. I mean, Judy Garland, the Trolley Song. Mariana Ulrich is a fantastic director. It'll be a fun show. Then we're doing Oliver, and that's in February. And, I mean, just about everybody knows Oliver and the wonderful music that's involved with that. And that's Brian Blanks, who's directing. And Brian is one of our really up-and-coming directors. I can't say enough about the man. He lives his show, and it's marvelous. And then we're doing Miracle Worker, and that's in March. And that, again, will be a fabulous show. It's a drama. It always sells. It's just kind of a timeless drama. People seem to love it, and they come and see it. And Shrek the Musical ends our season. You know, I don't have to say more than that. Shrek, I'm sure we'll see hundreds and hundreds of little children out there wanting to catch it, as well as adults who are children at heart. And that one is in May. Let's see, it starts on the 2nd, and it runs through the 11th, and we'll have like 9 productions there of it. So it should be a really great one. And then we've got a fundraiser coming after that, which will be Smokey Joe's Cafe. Again, really a nice show, good show, lots of neat music. Then we're going to be doing a Christmas show, which will be similar to what we did last year. Home for Christmas was that one. And that was made up by some folks in New York and all over the country, some of our graduates who moved out of the city and got a hold of us and said they wanted to put on a show. And it was one of the most marvelous things I've seen put together in as short a time as they had. They had 3 days in the theater to build a set, block everything, choreograph their numbers, and it came across flawlessly. It was just magnificent. And some of those folks are going to come back this year and do it. So we got a great season coming up.
You know, as you were going through the season, it struck me that there's also a very careful balancing act that goes into every season. You've got the season bookended by Shrek, which is a brand new show, with mm-hmm. Les Mis at the beginning, which is just off of Broadway. It's just available to community theater. But you've also got some things that, you know, that you've also got some war horses, some chestnuts, you know, like Barefoot in the Park and like Oliver, which is a great show that maybe 20 years ago or 30 years ago people did a lot, but it's kind of been neglected, I think, for a little while.
Right. And those old chestnuts are really ones that people enjoy seeing. An Annie. You could probably do Annie every other year and pack the house every time you did it. You know, there are certain shows that are timeless. And that particular show, it's one of my favorites. I did it at Cornstalk a million years ago. And I love the music. And the audiences love it. And it's, you know, it has such a happy ending. This little boy who has been lost to his family has finally found his way home. And it just ends on such an up note that I think audiences like that. They like to have happy things.
We've been talking with Jim Bobrowski, who's appearing in Peoria Players' production of Barefoot in the Park. The show opens tonight, and it continues through Sunday, October 13th. Jim, break a leg.
Thank you.
And Nathan, here it is, the first Friday of the month, and that means it's time for the First Friday Artist Studio and Gallery Tours tonight from 5 to 9 p.m. And as a special addition to this month's arts demonstrations and activities, look for exhibits related to the citywide celebration of women artists held in coordination with October's National Arts and Humanities Month. There's so much art to see and so many activities planned at our artist exhibits. Plan to stop on by.
And finally, the St. Martin Chamber Players are presenting a concert this weekend, a Britain Birthday Bash. It's to commemorate the 100th anniversary of the birth of English composer Benjamin Britten. The concert is Sunday at 3 o'clock at the Universalist Unitarian Church.
Out and About is a production of Peoria Public Radio and Arts Partners of Central Illinois. Each week, we connect you to the arts community by talking with local arts leaders and performers.
Our producer is Stephanie Sobey. You can learn more about Peoria Public Radio when you visit our website at peoriapublicradio.org. I'm Nathan Irwin, and this is Out and About.